We all deserve some yay in our day. So say hello to Hello. Hello makes oral and personal care products that add wonder to your routine, like a toothpaste that makes brushing fun for kids. It's called Unicorn Sparkle Toothpaste. It tastes like rainbows and sunshine, works brilliantly, and it's fun. So it's pretty much magic. And for the adults, Hello Anti-Plaque and Whitening Toothpaste, which is just as good without the unicorns. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This is Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
JBL Tour Pro 3 earbuds are for those who don't conform to the standard.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get into some touchscreen technology, how about the smart charging case, clear sound? These are not standard things. You're only going to get them with the JBL Tour Pro 3, baby.
And I love the sound of JBL when it goes, boom, boom. These earbuds are packed with innovation because you can't stand out by following others.
Touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control, instant EQ customization, true adaptive noise canceling, and the one-of-a-kind audio transmitter, which can plug and play with everything from game consoles to in-flight entertainment.
The audio transmitter also allows for JBL Spatial 360 sound that takes any audio and turns it into a 360 immersive experience.
What more could you want? First doesn't follow. Grab a pair at JBL.com.
There's a time and a place for Filet-O-Fish. But breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Want to talk about a bad day in court? Brian Koberger just had a really, really bad day in court. After months of motion after motion, challenge after challenge, his legal team did everything they could to chip away at the case against him. And they failed. That's the takeaway. But not without trying. I gotta give it to Ann Taylor. She is a good attorney. They didn't fail just a little bit here, though. They completely failed at all the motions they've been bringing up. Every single major motion they filed, denied. Every single argument to suppress key evidence, thrown out. Every attempt to dismiss the case on technicalities, dead on arrival. The judge's rulings in the case here were not just a setback for the defense. They were a full-on collapse of any hope Koberger had of walking into that trial without the jury seeing the most damning pieces of evidence against him. So let's break it all down. What just happened in court? Why it's a disaster for the defense? And how it shapes the road ahead in this very high-profile trial? Let's start with the biggest fight, the DNA evidence. This has been a battle for months. Investigators found a knife sheath next to one of the victims. And on that sheath, lo and behold, they recovered a single male DNA sample. That sample didn't match anyone in the house. It didn't match friends. It didn't match the victims. But through a forensic process called investigative genetic genealogy, otherwise known as IGG, law enforcement tracked it back to Koberger's family line. So, what does that mean? Once they had a suspect, they went one step further. They tailed Koberger in Pennsylvania, grabbed trash from his family's home, and just like that, they found a familial match. The DNA on the knife sheath was a statistical match to Brian Koberger. When I say statistical match, I mean like there's no chance it could be anybody else because there's not that many people on the planet. So it's not like a 1 in 5 or maybe it's kind of like, it's like, no, there's up, up, down, down, left, right, BA, BA, select, start has nothing on this statistical match. Multiply that by a million. and how every combination could be. That's what this is like in terms of a statistical match. If one thing is off, it could be somebody else. But that's not how that works, because you don't have things that are off when you're testing DNA. Here's what it is. It's a fact. It's very fact-based science. For the defense, this was the mountain they needed to move, and they tried. They argued that police violated Koberger's privacy using genealogy databases. They really didn't do anything wrong there or violate anyone's privacy. That the methods used to analyze the DNA were flawed. Again, pretty bullshit argument. There's really nothing about this science that is flawed. And that the entire process should be just thrown out because they said those words flawed and it violated this, and it still doesn't change the fact that his DNA was there. Here's the thing. Investigators did not take Koberger's DNA without a warrant. They didn't sneak into his house and swab his toothbrush. They used a public method that's been upheld in previous cases, and the judge agreed. This is how they caught the Golden State Killer. Same sort of method. Should we have not done that? Would it have violated the Golden State Killer's rights? So that motion, denied. The DNA evidence stays in, and that alone is a huge problem for the defense, but it gets worse. Because next up, his phone records. Prosecutors say that Koberger's phone pinged near the victim's home at least 12 times in the months leading up to the murders. And on the night of the killings, the phone was turned off. Which, let's be honest, is not what most people do in the middle of the night unless they're up to something. Oh, wait. Looking at the stars. He's a stargazer. That's his excuse. Here's a kicker. After the murders, the phone magically turns back on, pings miles away, right along the route where prosecutors say Koberger would have taken to leave the scene and head back to Pullman, Washington. The defense tried to get this evidence thrown out, too. They argued that the search warrants for his phone data were too broad, that the police overstepped, that the data was unreliable. Basically, it's unreliable. You can't do that. It's a lie. It's lies. It's all lies. When your best defense is, I like to look at the stars, you're gonna go after anything you really can, you know? He ruled that law enforcement followed the law, and that the data is absolutely coming into trial. So now we have two huge pieces of evidence locked in. DNA that places Koberger at the crime scene, and cell data that shows he was in the area before and after the murders. You think at this point maybe the defense would have a win, right? Maybe just a little ruling on their side? Nope. That's not how this went. Because next up was the video, surveillance evidence. Law enforcement tracked down a white Hyundai Elantra, the same type of car that multiple surveillance cameras captured near the crime scene. The car was caught on video multiple times, both near the victim's house and on the likely escape route after the murders. And guess who drove a white Hyundai Elantra at the time? Brian Koberger. What a coincidence. The defense fought hard to challenge how police identified the car, but once again, the judge shut it down. The videos were collected legally, the identification of the car was sound, and the evidence is staying in. Now, let's just take a second here, because at this point, the case against Koberger is looking rock solid. But DNA, we have that linking him to the murder scene, phone records that put him near the victim's home repeatedly, and a car that matches the one fleeing the scene. So what's left? The defense has one last big swing, trying to get the entire case in its entirety dismissed, thrown out. It's a bold move. But hey, you got to try. It's not a surprising try, unlikely try, but not a surprising. They argued that the grand jury indictment was unfair, that the prosecution withheld key information, and that Idaho's grand jury process itself was flawed. The judge? Not really having it. He didn't just deny the motion. He actually called the argument creative, but legally incorrect. In other words, nice try, but sorry, no. Parting gifts are Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat. So let's take a stock of what just happened here. The DNA evidence, staying in. Phone data, staying in. The surveillance footage, staying in. The indictment, 100% solid. This wasn't just a bad day for the defense. It was a complete disaster for Koberger's legal team. They needed to knock out some of the prosecution's best evidence, and they failed at every single turn. Now the case is moving forward with everything on the table. The trial isn't just happening, it's happening with the full weight of the evidence against Koberger intact. And with these rulings, the prosecution now has a clear path to presenting their case exactly as they planned. That doesn't mean the defense is out of options. With their suppression motions denied, they're going to have to pivot to focus less on blocking evidence and more on casting doubt on that very evidence when the trial begins. And that means their next move is to shift attention away from the evidence altogether towards something that they can still control. Because if they can't stop the trial, maybe they can change where and how it happens. Actually, they've kind of already done that, because before those rulings came down, there was a scenario where things could have gone sideways for the state. If the judge had ruled that the DNA was inadmissible, if the phone records had been suppressed, if the grand jury indictment had been thrown out, this whole case could have unraveled. The prosecution could have been scrambling to patch holes, losing key evidence, maybe even negotiating a plea deal just to avoid a trial without their strongest pieces of proof. But that did not happen. Every crucial piece of evidence is coming in. And those are just the ones we know about. And now they get to build their case exactly the way they had planned. And the case, it's looking rock solid. Let's talk about why the prosecution is in such a strong position right now. Then we'll talk more about the defense. It's not just about having evidence. It's about having the gravity of evidence and how it all fits together and shows a pattern. That's what you really need. Not just one piece here, one piece there. What's the pattern with all of this? Start with the biggest piece, the DNA on the knife sheath. It's not just that Koberger's DNA was found near the bodies. It was found on a military-grade style knife sheath lying next to one of the victims. It's not a random transfer situation. That's not something you can explain away with a, well, maybe this DNA got on here some other way. It was looking at it at the Kmart. He was checking out the thing. He got distracted by the blue light special in aisle 5, which happened to be sub sandwiches that day with American cheese, which are quite delicious with the mustard sauce. No. And by the way, there are no Kmarts anymore. And the delis went away in the 80s. This is a direct piece of physical evidence found right where it shouldn't be. And the prosecution knows exactly how to frame this for a jury. If they're sitting in the jury box, what's the first thing that comes to mind when you hear about DNA on a murder accessory left at a crime scene? You don't have to be a forensic expert to get it. The knife sheath was there. The person who touched it, there. And if the person who touched it was Koberger, kind of presents a problem. But it's not just DNA, and this is where the prosecution really has the advantage, because in a weaker case, you might have just had one major piece of evidence, and the defense could pick it apart. But here, the state has layers Larry, layers, I'm going to say levels, Jerry, levels, layers. Because now you add in cell phone tracking data, and suddenly Koberger isn't just connected to the crime scene after the fact, he's connected to it before the murders even happened. His phone wasn't just in the area once or twice, it was in the neighborhood at least 12 separate times. Always at night. Always in the weeks leading up to the murders. And that pattern? That's not random. The prosecution's argument is simple. This wasn't a coincidence. This was surveillance. And if you're sitting on that jury, you don't need a law degree to understand what exactly that means. Now, maybe, just maybe, if the only evidence that his phone was ever near the victim's house was just a few times, kind of at random, the defense could spin some kind of excuse. Maybe they'd argue he had some unknown connection in the area, or it was a night owl. Well, they kind of did argue that one. He likes to look at the stars. He just happened to drive through the neighborhood at weird hours. Biggest problem for the defense, the night of the murders, the phone suddenly goes dark. No activity, no location pings, no data. Just him kind of heading that way and then off. And hours later, after the murders, it comes back on magically. Miles away from the crime scene, heading away on the route that one would take if you were at the crime scene and going back to Pullman, Washington. The prosecution is going to say that's not normal behavior. That's someone turning off their phone so they can't be tracked. And the jury, they're probably going to think the same thing. So now you've got DNA tying him to the scene and digital evidence showing him near the house in the weeks leading up to the crime. And just to top it all off, surveillance footage, that darn pesky surveillance footage that people have. The white Hyundai Elantra is the final nail in the coffin because law enforcement didn't just find any white Elantra. They found his. The same make, the same model, the same damage to the front of the car that matches the one seen in the surveillance footage. And the jury is going to be shown those images. They're going to see a white Hyundai Elantra near the crime scene at the exact time the murders took place. They're going to see Koberger's white Hyundai Elantra pulled over by police just days later, matching the description of the car they'd been looking for. And the prosecution is going to say, there's no way this is a coincidence. This is why the state's case is so strong. It's not just one piece of evidence. It's a sequence of events and evidence that all lines up. And there's DNA at the scene, too. Phone records showing he was near the house multiple times, a car that matches the getaway vehicle caught on surveillance, and now, thanks to the judge's ruling, none of it is getting thrown out. So what does this mean for the trial? Just lock it up, throw him away, we're done with it? Of course not. First, the defense is in a terrible position at this moment in time. What does it say at this moment in time? This trial is still months away. And if we don't have anything holding it back further, it could be even longer if something pops up. Originally, their strategy was to keep this stuff out of the trial. Their plan was to convince the judge that some of this evidence was gathered improperly, that the police overstepped their authority, that there was some technical flaw in the investigation. But now they don't have that option anymore. That's been seen, said, and determined. The DNA is in, the phone records are in, the car evidence is in. So their only chance now, well, got to pick it apart. They're going to attack the science. They're going to try to convince the jury that the DNA testing wasn't reliable, that the phone data isn't as precise as it seems, that the surveillance footage is too blurry to be conclusive. Basically the same things they tried to argue to keep this thing out of court, now they're going to have to argue in court. And you're going to have a prosecution that's going to counter all that going, here's why they're wrong. And that's their job. That's what they have to do. But here's the problem. The prosecution doesn't need any one piece of evidence to convict him. The case isn't built around just the DNA or just the phone data or just the car. It's all of it together. And that's why the death penalty is still on the table. Because the prosecution is treating this as a premeditated mass murder. They're going to argue that Koberger knew exactly what he was doing. And legally, that means the jury has to be death qualified. Are you death qualified? Ask your doctor if you're death qualified today. And that changes the entire jury selection process. Because not only does the state have to prove Koberger is guilty, they have to convince jurors that he deserves execution if he's convicted. And that's a whole different ballgame. Now, this doesn't guarantee a conviction. It never does. But what does it actually do? The prosecution is walking into this trial exactly where they want to be, with all their evidence, all their arguments, and no legal roadblocks standing in their way. The defense, on the other hand, they're in damage control mode. And with no way to suppress evidence, they have to shift strategies fast, because if they ain't going to stop the evidence from coming in, maybe they can find another way to shake up the trial. At this point, the defense knows they're out of options. The evidence isn't going anywhere. The prosecution's case is coming in exactly as planned. So what now? Where can they pivot to? They can't stop the case from moving forward. What can you do? Can you change the playing field, literally? Well, they've already done that, actually. Venue change. Originally, the trial was set to take place in Moscow, Idaho, the same small college town where the murders happened. And for the prosecution, that would have been, well, you know, fairly ideal. Because in Moscow, this case isn't just news, it's personal. These weren't just four random victims. They were beloved members of that community. They went to school there. Their families and friends still live there. You can't walk down a street in Moscow without running into someone who's been directly affected by this case. And the defense knew that. They knew sitting an unbiased jury in Moscow was going to be nearly impossible. So they pushed hard to get the trial moved somewhere else, somewhere bigger, somewhere less emotionally invested. And the judge agreed. Now, instead of taking place in Moscow, the trial will happen in Boise in Ada County, the largest city in Idaho. This is a huge win for the defense because Boise is over 300 miles away from where the crime actually happened. It's a bigger city with a more diverse jury pool, people who haven't spent the last 2 years living and breathing this case every single day. And that's exactly what the defense needs right now, because let's be real. If this trial had happened in Moscow, the odds of finding 12 people with zero bias, pretty much non-existent. Even the most professional, impartial jurors would have walked into that courtroom with some level of emotional attachment to the case. But in Boise, you're going to get a completely different jury pool. Now, does that mean it's going to be pro-Koberger? No. But it does mean they'll have a much better shot at finding people who don't have a deep personal connection to the case. And that's only fair. That's exactly what they need. But venue change isn't enough, because the other big problem for the defense? The media. From the second Koberger was arrested, the case has been everywhere. From court hearings, every new piece of evidence, every leaked document, it's all been dissected, analyzed, and turned into headlines. And for the defense, it's kind of a nightmare, because jurors don't live in a vacuum. They see the news, they hear the speculation, and once a story like this gets into the public consciousness, it's almost impossible to undo the damage. So the defense went after media access in the courtroom, arguing that the cameras were turning this case into a spectacle. They pointed that the way coverage has zoomed in on Koberger's every move, his facial expressions, his body language, the way he interacts with his lawyers. And they made the case that that kind of hyper-focused coverage is creating prejudice before the trial even started. And once again, the judge agreed. They had a win there. So the cameras are kind of out. No more close-ups, no more endless replaying of Koberger's every reaction in slow motion. Instead, there's a single, controlled courtroom live stream run by the court itself. I mean, it's no dramatic camera angles, no more circus, just the trial as it happens. It's another win for the defense, because the last thing they want is for the jury to be influenced by viral clips and out-of-context headlines. But here's the thing, none of this changes the actual evidence. And that's where the defense has to get creative, because at this point, their only real shot at saving Koberger isn't blocking evidence, it's making the jury doubt it. And that starts with attacking the science, the biggest target, the DNA. The prosecution is going to say that the DNA from the knife sheath is undeniable proof that Koberger was at the scene. The defense, they're going to push back, and they're going to push back hard. Expect them to argue that DNA transfer is more complicated than it seems. Although it's really not, once you look at the science of it. I mean, one can just say that out loud if you know nothing about it. I'm really not a fan of the food at that restaurant. Have you ever been to that restaurant? No, I haven't. Well, then how can you have an opinion? Do you know how DNA transfer works? Not exactly. Well, then, just saying it's more how do you know it's more complicated? What makes it more complicated? What makes the data from the DNA, the touch DNA on that knife sheath, complicated? What's complicated about that linking process to Koberger? How could it possibly lead to anyone else? Now, the answer to that is it can't. It just statistically can't. There's black, there's white, there's science, there's fiction, and this is both science and fact. Koberger's DNA could have ended up on that sheath some other way. That's what they'll try and argue. Through contamination, through secondary transfer, through some unknown third party. Not likely. Or even really possible in many ways, unless somebody stole Koberger's knife and knife sheath recently. We haven't heard about that. And we don't really know exactly what's going on in those purchases that they're looking at from Koberger. But I'll tell you what, if there's a Kobar knife and a sheath on that Amazon order list, it ain't gonna look good. They're also going to attack the way investigators identified Koberger as a suspect in the first place. Because remember, the police didn't start with his DNA. They started with a genealogy search, building a family tree of potential suspects based on DNA from the crime scene. That method, investigative genetic genealogy, it's still relatively new. And it has been upheld in other cases. Again, like the Golden State Killer, and there's a litany of other ones too, that all led to the real killer. The defense is going to argue that the technique is unreliable, that led investigators straight to Koberger while ignoring other possibilities. Okay, so just basically putting a lot of fluff out there. And look, if you're watching this and you can say, I can tell you why this science is flawed, be my guest. Please explain away in the comment section on YouTube or wherever you're getting this podcast. If they can convince even one juror that the DNA is not as airtight as the prosecution says it is, that could be enough to create reasonable doubt. But DNA is not their only target. They're also going to go after the phone records. The prosecution is going to argue that Koberger's phone data places him near the victim's house repeatedly in the weeks before the murders. But the defense, they're going to question how precise that data really is. I bring in their own expert witnesses, people who specialize in cell tower tracking, and I'm going to put that in quotations, because if you know how this works, you know how this works. If you're uninformed on how this works, and you're just going to talk out of your, about it, you can still call yourself an expert, I guess. It won't be the first time we've seen an expert in a courtroom talking out of, They're going to argue that just because a phone pings at a certain area, that doesn't mean the person was actually there. No, it doesn't mean they're like right next to the tower. It means you're within a range. And these towers, they don't go that far. You'd be surprised just how not far cell towers have coverage. It's not like a radio tower. Like, they have to be within so many miles of each tower to ping. That's why you see them everywhere. Because they don't have that much ground that a single tower covers. You'd be very surprised if you looked at that. They're to try to introduce doubt, and that's their entire game plan now. Because At this stage, the prosecution doesn't need to prove motive. They don't need to prove why Koberger allegedly did this. They just need to prove that he was there and that he committed these crimes and that the evidence supports it beyond a reasonable doubt. And the defense, their only job now is to chip away at that certainty. Or one could argue, do whatever you can to not have Koberger executed by the state. They don't need to convince the jury that Koberger is innocent. They just need one juror to say, I'm not sure. It's all it takes. One person, one doubt, one hung jury. And that's what they're betting everything on now. Because with the trial now set to begin in several months, and with the full weight of the prosecution coming in, doubt is the only thing left that the Koberger team has to fight for.
The latest true crime stories, expert breakdowns, and shocking twists, all in one place. Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. You just made it through an episode of Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Congrats on surviving the ads. Want to skip them completely next time?
What is that?
Join the True Crime Today Premium Plus channel on Apple Podcasts. Ad-free episodes, exclusive early access, and no interruptions. Just pure crime storytelling. Try it free for 3 days. Don't wait.
Bitchin' stuff. Dude.
Hit subscribe now on Apple Podcasts and get ahead of the mystery.
You know what I'm saying?
This is Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
JBL Tour Pro 3 earbuds are for those who don't conform to the standard.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get into some touchscreen technology, how about the smart charging case, clear sound? These are not standard things. You're only going to get them with the JBL Tour Pro 3, baby.
And I love the sound of JBL when it goes, boom, boo. These earbuds are packed with innovation because you can't stand out by following others.
Touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control, instant EQ customization, true adaptive noise canceling, and the one-of-a-kind audio transmitter, which can plug and play with everything from game consoles to in-flight entertainment.
The audio transmitter also allows for JBL Spatial 360 sound that takes any audio and turns it into a 360 immersive experience.
What more could you want? First doesn't follow. Grab a pair at JBL.com.
Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
This is Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
JBL Tour Pro 3 earbuds are for those who don't conform to the standard.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get into some touchscreen technology, how about the smart charging case, clear sound? These are not standard things. You're only going to get them with the JBL Tour Pro 3, baby.
And I love the sound of JBL when it goes, boom, boo. These earbuds are packed with innovation because you can't stand out by following others.
Touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control, instant EQ customization, true adaptive noise canceling, and the one-of-a-kind audio transmitter, which can plug and play with everything from game consoles to in-flight entertainment.
The audio transmitter also allows for JBL Spatial 360 sound that takes any audio and turns it into a 360 immersive experience.
What more could you want? First doesn't follow. Grab a pair at JBL.com.
There's a time and a place for Filet-O-Fish, but breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
This is Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
JBL Tour Pro 3 earbuds are for those who don't conform to the standard.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get into some touchscreen technology, how about the smart charging case, clear sound? These are not standard things. You're only going to get them with the JBL Tour Pro 3, baby.
And I love the sound of JBL when it goes, These earbuds are packed with innovation because you can't stand out by following others.
Touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control, instant EQ customization, true adaptive noise canceling, and the one-of-a-kind audio transmitter, which can plug and play with everything from game consoles to in-flight entertainment.
The audio transmitter also allows for JBL Spatial 360 sound that takes any audio and turns it into a 360 immersive experience.
What more could you want? First doesn't follow. Grab a pair at JBL.com.
There's a time and a place for Filet-O-Fish. But breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
This is Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
JBL Tour Pro 3 earbuds are for those who don't conform to the standard.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get into some touchscreen technology, how about the smart charging case, clear sound? These are not standard things. You're only going to get them with the JBL Tour Pro 3, baby.
And I love the sound of JBL when it goes, these earbuds are packed with innovation because you can't stand out by following others.
Touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control, instant EQ customization, true adaptive noise canceling, and the one-of-a-kind audio transmitter, which can plug and play with everything from game consoles to in-flight entertainment.
The audio transmitter also allows for JBL Spatial 360 sound that takes any audio and turns it into a 360 immersive experience.
What more could you want? First doesn't follow. Grab a pair at JBL.com.
There's a time and a place for Filet-O-Fish, but breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
This is Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
JBL Tour Pro 3 earbuds are for those who don't conform to the standard.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get into some touchscreen technology, how about the smart charging case, clear sound? These are not standard things. You're only going to get them with the JBL Tour Pro 3, baby.
And I love the sound of JBL when it goes, these earbuds are packed with innovation because you can't stand out by following others.
Touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control, instant EQ customization, true adaptive noise canceling, and the one-of-a-kind audio transmitter, which can plug and play with everything from game consoles to in-flight entertainment.
The audio transmitter also allows for JBL Spatial 360 sound that takes any audio and turns it into a 360 immersive experience.
What more could you want? First doesn't follow. Grab a pair at JBL.com.
There's a time and a place for Filet-O-Fish, but breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
This is Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
JBL Tour Pro 3 earbuds are for those who don't conform to the standard.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get into some touchscreen technology, how about the smart charging case, clear sound? These are not standard things. You're only going to get them with the JBL Tour Pro 3, baby.
And I love the sound of JBL when it goes, these earbuds are packed with innovation because you can't stand out by following others.
Touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control, instant EQ customization, true adaptive noise canceling, and the one-of-a-kind audio transmitter, which can plug and play with everything from game consoles to in-flight entertainment.
The audio transmitter also allows for JBL Spatial 360 sound that takes any audio and turns it into a 360 immersive experience.
What more could you want? First doesn't follow. Grab a pair at JBL.com.
There's a time and a place for Filet-O-Fish, but breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code iHeart or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
From the office to a first date, there's a lot of pressure to wear the right clothes for every situation. But clothes don't make the man. With Mack Weldon, you can build a wardrobe that looks polished in any setting and tells the world that you stay you wherever you go. They combine timeless style with modern performance materials to keep you looking good and feeling comfortable all day, no matter what's on today's agenda. Browse everything from shorts and polos to sweats and crews. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 25% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MACKWELDON.com, promo code MACK25.